That means we can directly go into the topic. I would like to invite Venerable Buddharakkhita to start the commence the session, please.
So I'm going to start again from the sixth stanza in this, where in this case Magandhya replies, or he repeats back what the Buddha has stated. So Magandhya says, "If indeed it is not by view, not by learning, nor by knowledge," said Magandhya, "nor by good behavior and observances, that one speaks of purity, nor without view, without learning, without knowledge, without good behavior and observances, not in that way. I think this is an utterly confused teaching. Some fall back on purity by means of view." So as I mentioned the last time, I think when we are mindful, we know our state of mind. So when we're confused, we're confused. So for instance, people will maybe following the war that's happening at the moment, they don't know the history of Yugoslavia or the history of the conflict, or they don't understand the politics or the military aspects. So they're confused. So they say, what do you think of this and what do you think of that? But I think we should start from a place of, I know I'm confused, and that I feel okay with my confusion. Like sometimes it's informative to know how I think and how I feel in any moment. And so this is one of the great superpowers of mindfulness, is that I am mindful of how I think and how I feel. And then I can take wise course of action based on that information. So in this case, when Magandhya tells the Buddha that he's confused, you can take this as that he's dismissing the Buddha's teachings, or you can say that he's being candid with the Buddha, that he's confused about these teachings because they so radically go against his own understanding of, you know, how one should approach the world, or how one should go into these deep spiritual matters. And it's very important what the Buddha says here. It is not by things like learning, by knowledge, nor by good behavior and observances and so forth. So these are like key characteristics and descriptions of a person who is a sotapanna, because they are liberated from the habit or the habituation that it must be by learning, it must be by behavior, it must be by observances. And so they get into practices of purification, and so many religions really push forward this emphasis on form, on purity of behavior, of actions. And if you look at the Jain religion, for instance, where you have the monks in that tradition are naked and they wear a face mask, and they sweep the path, and they put a tremendous emphasis on extremely purifying methods and ways, and that this is the way to liberation, is through excruciating observances and so-called good behaviors. But in fact, this path is a path of wisdom. So in the English language, we have to translate things as not by view, not by learning, not by knowledge. And this is kind of very hard to kind of understand. If you have a child and they're running around, you have to just say stop. You know, if you say stop running, then the child keeps running because they don't hear the running part. They just hear they don't hear the stop part. They hear running. So you know, we have to give simple instructions to our mind. And in English, it doesn't translate out well to say not by view, not by learning. So I like to think about it as freedom from view, freedom from learning, freedom from knowledge. So we shouldn't be shackled by our knowledge. We shouldn't be shackled by our views, and instead hold them very lightly so that we can adapt and change depending on the conditions. you know, we should just start out from a view as a kind of an initial model of the world or an initial understanding. You know, I have a view that, for instance, all Sri Lankan people eat with their hands and they all eat rice. So if I meet a Sri Lankan person who doesn't eat with their hands and who doesn't eat rice, I shouldn't be sticking to my view. You know, what's wrong with you? Why do you eat with a knife and a fork? Why do you insist on not eating rice and having a very strong view about it? It's just a starting point. Yeah, I know a lot of Sri Lankans eat with their hands. I know a lot of Sri Lankans eat with their rice. That's just a kind of an initial model of the world. But I don't have to be, I'm not stuck to it. I can be free from that view. Or maybe somebody thinks the same about Irish people. Oh, Irish people are like this, or American people are like that, or Russian people are like this or like that. And we make very simple views about them, and we hold fiercely onto that view, and it becomes cruel, or we're stuck to it. We're not free from that view. So in this way, you can see that the Buddha has really hit to the core of the forerunner path to Sotapanna, and it is a radical teaching, and Magandia is utterly confused by this teaching, and he knows he's confused. You know, this is radical. This is really confusing. And, he's a Brahmin. He's a very cultured kind of person. He's put a lot of time and effort into, you know, cultivating these practices and making them part of his life, very ritualistic and very knowledgeable and so forth. Kind of a person, and now he's been told by the Buddha it's not by learning, not by views, not by observances and behaviors. So he, you know, if I can be honest, if I can be with my experience of confusion and not be intimidated by it or not anxious by it or not fearful of my own personal confusion, then there's a great potential for a radical insight to occur, a breakthrough in the knowledge. And this is, you know, this is one of those points in time where wisdom starts to penetrate into an object. So initially, when we approach an object, we are deflected away from that object by anger or dislike, or we can see the fault in something. We can be fault-finding about that object and dislike it, or we can be greedy and attracted towards that object and desirous of that object. But instead, wisdom is approaching it, and if it understands it, it can penetrate the object. But if it doesn't understand, maybe it's just waiting for more knowledge to accumulate, more insight to accumulate. And we are confused in that period of time. But I know I'm confused, and it's okay to be confused, and it's okay to not know everything. And it's okay that this is a different behavior or a different form or a different view or a different learning from my own learning. And let me try to understand this. Let me be patient with this thing that I'm ignorant of, and allow the time and the concentration and the mindfulness and all these other factors to arise, so that I can penetrate into it and make a deep understanding by wisdom of what is that object. So maybe we can hear from Mahatero on this. Number six.
Yes, last time also we fairly touched this. And this is a kind of a thing. When we are defining mindfulness, we keep these kind of confusion not mixed up with bare attention and the mindfulness. So the very first time when I am hearing about the mindfulness, the appealing term was choiceless awareness. And Nilamba was very famous for that. And then Dr. Parakram Pranayan told it is an invention or coining by Ken Wilber. And he has written that book, No Boundaries. Mm-hmm. And that book is always not in the library. Always it is someone borrowed. So once I became the residence person, and I was the executive secretary to the Nilambe. And I am the only person living in that time. no one is coming because there was some kind of a difficulty. So I went through the book and I found the way he introduced the choiceless awareness. That means always you must have a beginner's mind. You don't have ditthi or that kind of a view. You don't have a knowledge. You understand, I am a beginner. And you have no purity. You don't claim that I am a Samaritan, I am a blah, blah, blah. So it was nicely fitting into my situation. I was not aware of the Buddhism. And I have already broken all the precepts as a university student. And mindfulness also, I don't know. But I thought it's a kind of a door opening. So therefore, I find that the whole spiritual path is trial and error. There's no sure and short method. All this you have to do, knowing you are doing something wrong. Never mind. We have the noble quest. Buddha has given the openness. And you are not doing to harm someone. They come along your path as you observe, as you continue. Don't hesitate. You do it. And no, it is not perfect. And therefore, it is a trial and error. And keep the mind always, I am a beginner. And I have not taken a stand. I am so and so and blah, blah, blah. And therefore, someone come and tell you, you say, you listen, because you don't know. Therefore, the beginner's mind is kind of a very potential, very possibility of someone to adopt into something. Listen to, you are carefully listening to someone. And the choiceless awareness, you are not going to be judgmental. Just let it go, talk, no problem. Luckily, you have time. If it is boring, you get up and go, no problem. And then when I go to Panditarama, who Pandita Sahib was told, if you are going to decide this is because of that, you must know all the possible variables. Then only you can decide this is for that. But not a single event on the earth happening due to the single variable, due to the single causative factor. Always it is happening due to a lot of causative factor. You may know only the prominent thing and you will attribute the result to the prominent factor. What are the other not prominent areas? You don't know. And the result also, due to this so many reasons, if something happened, there are not only that results, there are a lot of other shadows and shades of meaning. So therefore, our mind see on the linear method. This gave that, but it is not. There are a lot of reasons. This is the most prominent one. And it gives rise to this. But there are a lot of other shadows, shades of meaning. So therefore, when you are comparing the prominent thing, you don't know your ignorance. You don't know it is happening due to a lot of variable factors. So in statistics, in econometrics, we fix some variables and try to see relationship between these two, and that is also happening only in linear method, not in a matrix way. So mind never works in a linear method, but bloody education is always linear method. So therefore confusion is a must. Because teachers think they know, but I am sure children know better than teachers, because their minds are free. And when the monks are preaching, the lay people, sometimes they are more purer than monks. So they are laughing at. But knowing that you are a joker, you are also sharing your views, but you are not dictating, you are not professing something. You say, this is my view. I am not asking you to believe it, but I know you are in a confusion. I know I am also in a confusion. But can our relationship, our interaction leading to some kind of enlightenment, some kind of simplification rather than complications. So therefore, for Magandhya, early part of the argument, not by view, not by knowledge, not by other thing you can purify, because Magandhya has every quality but still is impure. But his daughter know any kind of qualities and she is expecting something to come and take me as a bride, and it's a pot of shit. For them, Buddha says, not by view, not by not having view, not by not having education, not by this and that, also purification. So then both are addressed but in a negative way, but never explain what is the best combination. Best combination is the middle path. Middle path is anyone can approach if they have choiceless awareness, if they have beginner's mind. So therefore, Magandhya starting is a very adamant person, but ultimately he softens his mind. But the Magandhya's daughter, starting she was welcoming, but at last end up with the hard and fast, strong mind to negate and destroy the Buddha's reputation. Same thing happened due to the same argument. Father and mother took different action. Daughter took different action. But the Buddha, the commentator says, he was soon after the enlightenment. So therefore, he is very arrogant towards the Mara's daughters, three daughters. He saw Magandhya also as an agent of Mara. It's a commentator's comment. So therefore, we have to understand when we become meditators, when you are specifically doing vipassana, have an open mind. Understanding everything is a trial and error. No one can tell something for sure. But he can suggest. If you second it, you are responsible. But you can take it as a suggestion and put into practice, then you are progressing. So therefore, this confusion is a good boiling pot. And if you know you are in confusion, you are better. But if you know that I am not in a confusion, therefore it says if someone is telling I know quantum physics, he never knows quantum physics. If you know chaos theory, that means he's an idiot. Well, it's such a dynamic thing. It's a theory. It is not proved yet. So likewise, what the Buddha says, don't accept for the truth. Don't say others are not truth. You do experiment and see, but not that is available in the holy scripts. You have to accept. But this is not. So that is something invite you. For me, as a young person, and still I try to be that same old young person, to keep it open for everyone. So therefore, Magandhya Sutta is often quoted by Venerable Jnanananda in his Nivane Nivima Desana. And it's a very profound, but extremes are talking about. Fully view-driven, or fully knowledge-driven, or fully conceit-driven, desire-driven characters. But still there's a theme. Still there's a theme. So therefore, the beginner's mind, you can't learn. Choiceless awareness, you can't learn. It's something inherent. So vipassana and this kind of suttas, only for that kind of genetic framework, that kind of a mindset. So nowadays in Satipasala, we are learning, can we change the mindset? We know education reform is for the change the mindset, but it's a trial and error. So very little people only accept the mindfulness. Very little people only accept this openness. Little people only accept these variable factors. They wanted to have hard and fast formulas, and that is, it is completely disproved by science. Science is utter bullshit. Going to frame, okay, everything framed and do, and few weeks time it has been disproved. Again, few weeks time, that's also been disproved. So therefore, one has to be very dynamic, very dialectic, and that doesn't indicate that you are heretic, so you are suspecting something, you are doubtful, or you are not confirm whatever you are telling. You say, I am a beginner, I keep the thing open for any synthesis to happen, rather than taking the stand. That is what I remark, share with you all.
Okay, so the next verse, the Buddha replies back to Magandhya. And again, we notice this way of that the Buddha addresses what Magandhya has spoken of, and equally doesn't take any insult in what Magandhya has been saying. So the Buddha says, asking repeatedly, while dependent on a view, Magandhya, You have become baffled over things tightly grasped. But from this you have not gained even an inkling. Hence you consider it utterly confused. So again, here the Buddha is pointing out that because Magandhya has these views, like that you have to behave in a certain way, you have to be knowledgeable about all these different factors, that you have these good observances, you're learned, you're knowledgeable, and if you don't have these things, well, then you're wrong, or something like that, you know. So asking repeatedly while dependent on a view, because one is dependent on that view, one is holding onto that view, you're baffled. You're baffled because your view, your model of the world, your understanding is not in accordance with reality. It's not in accordance with the world. And again, I saw a lot of things written down this week about, people don't understand why Putin has invaded Russia or something like that. And they give speculative reasons why Putin is invading Russia. And, they don't realize that they're dependent on a view. The reality is he has invaded Russia, or he has invaded Ukraine, I should say, sorry. And we should say, okay, he has invaded, rather than he's wrong. Some things like that. Like, so when you hear people saying, oh, that person is wrong, you know that they're coming from a view about something. And unless we're very, very careful and we understand that the person is wrong because of a lot of experience or because of a lot of experiments or because we understand how somebody could come to the wrong conclusion or the wrong idea, instead, most people are very quick and kind of just say, oh, that person is wrong. And we fail to understand or take their perspective. We fail to we don't put in the effort. Something I came across recently was opinions are cheap, facts are expensive. You know, to actually have the facts, to actually build up a detailed picture, this takes a lot of mindful patience. And again, even when people come to the practice of mindfulness, they sit down, they learn the method, and then 10 minutes later or at the end of the retreat, at the end of the weekend, they expect to be enlightened. And if they're not enlightened, they're extremely disappointed. Whereas it's a method, it's a way of traveling, and you have to gain a huge, overwhelming amount of information to go against our wrong views, to uproot our ignorance. It takes a tremendous, tremendous effort. And we're all stuck in this situation of being dependent on our views. And therefore, we're repeatedly baffled by things that don't conform with our views because we tightly grasp to our views. And we fail to see the information in front of us. We fail to see the reality. But from this, you, Magandhya, have not gained even an inkling. You have not gained an inkling of the Dhamma because you have all of this sort of information and views and opinions and knowledge and theory and learning and observances blocking you because you're so holding on to these things. And hence you consider it utterly confusing when you hear somebody say otherwise to you, you know. So somebody might say, well, Russia is wrong to invade Ukraine. Well, you know, maybe Russia has their reasons and you need to sit and think about it and change, you know, at least open your mind to what might be other reasons. Instead of just saying, oh, this person's wrong and this other person is right, and my opinion counts and my opinion matters and so on. And it's really confusing. It leads to this sort of very bewildering situation. And instead of taking it as an opportunity to, you know, take on a different perspective, and vipassana means seeing things from many different perspectives, seeing a thing in multifold ways. Passana means to see, and vipassana means to, in an extraordinary way, see, or in a multifold way, see something. So you see it from all the different angles, and then you slowly allow that confusion that arises in the mind with something that is perplexing, unknown, new, and we allow the wisdom to penetrate, and we get insight. Anyway, that's something on that one.
Yeah, they say, therefore we are talking. We can't conclude anything, but vipassana is a radical reflection. The traditional reflections we are learning in the schools and in the Dhamma books and the religious books. But whenever you are confronted with your own breath, whenever you are confronted with your own walking meditation, all these things are available. But what is written on the book is available under your very nose. So you must know how to look at in a vigilant way, diligent way, or some kind of a radical way. So usually parents are not happy when children are thinking radical way because they want to have the conventional, traditional, orthodox children. The children, they are like landmines. They are breaking, broken and bursting. So therefore, always they are being suppressed. So education used as a tool to put them 35 children in the one room for 35 minutes, just like an asylum, and pushing, and at the end give exams. And some people are successful. But the exams are not the good measures to see whether they are successful or not, because it is for the success of the education system, not for the children. Not for the teachers. More than 70% teachers are... fellow is coming and checking. There are some things. So all the teachers... In Sri Lanka, 86% tension and frustration. So how can they teach? So they say they are training for 3 years. 5 years' time, they are resigning. Because the classroom is like an asylum. But the way the Buddha is teaching, by the way he's taken to the children to the under the tree and says, this is what? It is more natural. So therefore, the systematic, that there's this kind of putting into a shape, always cramping. So therefore, more you systematize, what has happened to the Magandhya will happen. But if you are living with the here and now, with that kind of the teaching, it cannot be known as teaching. It's a natural involvement, natural evolution. So therefore, this sutta, also known as Sutta Nipata, crux of the teaching of the Buddha. So there you have to have enough patience to understand this, otherwise you will read and get the traditional translation of these tensas and ultimately you think you know Magandhya Sutta. No, it is dynamic thing. Always you have to be with it. So therefore these suttas are usually not taken for the discussion in the traditional Buddhism. They are considered the philosophical part, the hard part of the teaching of the Buddha. But I don't think it is so reserved. It is connected with your breathing. It's connected with your walking meditation and all encounters with other people. So therefore, if you are free, with a choiceless awareness, non-reactive mind, these things can give kind of a solidification of your mindset. So therefore... First, Buddha talk about the ditthi views and then immediately change into the conceit. And then Magandhya's daughter is with the desire. So these are the three proliferations, mental proliferations. But the flow is changing ditthi to mana, or the conceit to the views to the conceit. Very difficult to understand what are the trends. But all the three are coming from the same root of ignorance. So it is now we are about to go into the mana area. So far we were on ditthi.
So the next verse, the Buddha continues by saying, one who thinks himself equal, superior or inferior might engage in disputes because of this, not shaking amongst these three discriminations, he does not think equal superior. So this idea that that one's conceit, one's idea that am I equal, am I superior, or am I inferior, is instantaneously arising whenever we meet another person. And it's quite an amazing phenomenon. If you're mindful enough, you can notice this kind of judgment that's going on in the dynamic between ourself and other people in particular. And we try to gauge the status of the other person, and we try to ascertain, you know, where are we? Am I equal, superior, or inferior? And this activity is extremely profound in that it's going on all the time, and we don't notice it. We don't pay attention because it is, you know, it's like air. It's in front of us, and it's between us and the other person in every situation. It's a great relief to be free from this conceitedness and judgment and evaluation of another person. And the word being used here is shaken. To be shaken amongst these three discriminations is a profound force that is happening in every human interaction. And we don't notice it because it's there all the time. And if I look at the monkeys around me all the time, they're constantly battling it out on their conceit, on this level. Am I inferior, superior, or are we equal? And the opposite is that I am not superior, or I am not inferior, or I am not, you know, the same. And in fact, again, we come down to this as being also not true. The only truth in that is that we are not the same. We are not equal. This is the insight that the arahants come to, that we are all individual. Everybody else seems to go around thinking that they're equal, superior, or inferior. So this mana or conceitedness is a profound force of mentality, of mind. And if you want to understand the physics of the mind, the basic atoms or the basic forces, you need to really, really watch this equal, inferior, or superior, and its dynamic. And it's like a magnetic field around a person, or even around other beings like animals, you know, dogs, monkeys. You'll see them always asserting themselves. Like even just as we were speaking earlier, one of the big male monkeys was approaching this area, and he was threatening one of the monks. So, you know, it's really, you can really see the conceit going on. And it's very funny, the dynamic, when you see it with the monkeys. But if we can laugh at our own conceitedness, our own dynamic, then it's I think close to wisdom, because wisdom finds the fault in things funny, whereas anger finds the fault in things to be annoying or boiling. So to be not shackled, to be not shaking amongst these three discriminations. Again, the interesting quality here is not shaking. And an arahant or a Buddha is described as somebody who is firm, and as firm as the hinge or the pillar on which the gate of a city is built. It's something extremely firm, whereas other people are viewed as shaking. Shaking meaning that they are inferior, or shaking that they're like a weak straw man, and that they're trying to assert themselves as being bigger than who they are. So to be free from this superiority, inferiority, or equality is a great thing. And these days you can hear a lot of people talking about equality, but in a sense there is no equality. We're all different. You know, that's the only equality that there is that everybody is different. So it's you can see how strong these views get built on what is equal, what is inferior, what is superior. And people will have to explain, you know, the great value that some object has to you. You know, if you're not familiar with, for instance, tea, Ceylon tea, you won't appreciate the difference between a Highland tea or a a single blend tea or single tea compared to a blended tea and so forth, you have no idea what this is. You can't distinguish, is this a good quality or a poor quality or a medium quality? And people are often trying to pretend that they know when they don't know, or that, you know, in a way, does it really matter? You know, you can see all of this kind of ritual and observances that get built up around something having a mystique or a brand, or what advertising, a lot of advertising is based on, that this object has qualities of superiority that some other object or property or whatever doesn't have. Like why one piece of land in one area, one street, is more valuable than another piece of land in another street is, you know, it's like a mystery. You go and the property agent is trying to explain why this location is more valuable than that location. And you have no idea why. You know, it can be confusing. And they're trying to explain the quality of this particular place or thing or object. So we put tremendous effort into this in the world. And to be free from this kind of force of conceit is a tremendous freedom.
So I would like to add some common sense. I was dragged into a discussion regarding the environmental pollution. And I don't know environmental pollution. I am living in the thicket forest, and our environment is very happy and full of oxygen and no other this and that. And then it happened me to learn the triple crisis of environment, and that air pollution and usage of plastics, and big countries are keep on doing, and therefore they wanted to have a faith and a mindfulness based answer. And when I'm learning one person, I think fully knowledgeable, he says environmental pollution is yes, but it is insignificant criterion for the moment. There are a lot of other things. It is yes. I mean, it is ever increasing a malice. And all of a sudden, while we are talking, two trends happen. One thing was they give a special time, the mindfulness versus environmental crisis. And while giving, Ukraine was attacked by Russia. So in my talk, I told, I am very happy that UN discussion, UN attention is not onto the faith, not onto the prayer, but given window for the mindfulness, then I would like to say, triple crisis is outside in the air pollution and usage of plastic and global warming and all the kind of thing. But internal, you have your conceit. Internal, you have your view. Internal, you have your desire. And you are also in a triple crisis. And as far as you are in triple crisis, I think you are not qualified to see the external crisis. First thing first. So therefore, why don't you consider this while we are provoked, while we are agitated by environmental crisis? What about your own? We are faith-based people. And therefore, why don't you have one of 5 minutes sitting and just listen to the bell and see what make me provoked? What make me agitated only to the environmental crisis? What about the bombing in Ukraine? And another message, two messages came. Now we have to have a peace, season of peace from mindfulness in order to have fairness to the Ukraine people. Now we're not the environment. Now the war is the situation. So we are changing, and if the war is going to finish, no use of that decision. But that decision is necessary when the thing is hot, when the thing is making news. We have to be. So we are also taking opportunities. And by that time, environment is insignificant. The war is the main thing because it's a man-made crisis. So we being mindful, we have to understand we are not jokers. We have to understand it. To be vigilant, to be diligent, how is your stream of consciousness? How much it is driven by the views? How much you are conceited? How much you are driven by the desire? So very first time when we are talking, it was Paramattaka Sutta, this Venerable Buddha Rakita told, once you are driven by the conceit, either you go to the one extreme of view or one extreme of desire. In Nisarnamanya, forest department says we are destroying the forest. They says we are violating, so they have put case after the case, telling our living inside the forest is a disaster. Better to let the grass to grow, break all the kutis. Well, that is one view. Other party says, the out of desire, the fellows of the forest, they come and chop thousands of acres. So we being the forest monk, we have to have this view-driven people and the desire-driven people. Lucky enough, we are not both. So we are, our concern must be to not to have conceited, telling that they are wrong, these are wrong. So instead of looking at the external triple crisis of the climate, mind your own business. Be aware of your view. Be aware of your conceit. Be aware of your desire. So Magandhya's daughter is desire-based. Magandhya, the father, great, is view-based. Now the Buddha says, still the conceit can misunderstanding. Can conceit can view lead to misunderstanding. So therefore we have to be, not we are equal, not we are superior, not we are inferior. Just be aware. If that is happening, no argument. There's nothing to prove, nothing to debate, because it is such a dynamic, at least here three variable factors. So often we are happy to talk about external, as he says, the entertainment is much entertaining than facts. Facts are there, but we are making news-making items, so that it is very dynamic, very attractive, and we make people moved by. So it is extrovert. So instead you become mindful about your conceit, your view and your desire, then there's nothing to argue, nothing to prove. I think it is accepted even in the Bible. Not only in the this thing, because I read part of the Proverbs in the Bible, fairly talking about without these kind of names. And maybe available in Quran also, maybe available in Mahabharata or the Hindu tradition. But people are not reading it. They wanted to have this kind of dramatic things, popular thing. They wanted to have this entertainment part. So therefore, when we are in a discussion, when we are in the mass media or social media, you have to understand how much we are being amused by these mass media and how much we are trying our best to make our marketing about Ceylon tea, Sri Lankan tea, marketing of mindfulness, marketing of mindful schools. Again, we are caught up. American, you have to tell about Ukraine. You are American.
I haven't even heard of
French that. Also involved. French government also, the French president also not just giving it up. They are fighting.
I haven't heard anything about this.
Lucky enough. No French ideas?
I have to admit, also I have no clue what's happening.
Never mind. What about the external climatic crisis and internal climate crisis? You have your own defilements, and you are talking highly about going to the stage and talking about this and that. But we are sitting and talking about 1 hour. We have to take this example and internalize to mind your own business. Be mindful.
Well, if I think I understand what Pente said, and I quite agree that if one is being mindful, then one won't be drawn into all these debates, because he will see these debates are being dangerous for oneself, because they will create more and more feelings, more and more sensations. So we just and we just lose ourselves in all these things. We think they are we, but no. So it's confusing. If one starts looking at all this news, he gets so confused. The mind is going in all directions. And then he's got opinions, point of views. But then he meets somebody else who has different opinions. Then he gets angry or that he gets doesn't understand. So it just people are losing themselves. So as Bente said, when you have awareness, then you're not interested into this, I think.
Gina, any idea about the Ukraine bombing?
I don't know much about it. I'm not reading into it because I have no interest.
You're happy?
I have no interest about it, so I don't look into it.
But your president is forky fingers.
My president?
The Chinese.
I don't know. I didn't think about Xi Jinping and what he's doing.
He's not even from China. He's from Canada.
So therefore, we are all multinational people, and we keep mind our own business. But the argument is, even if you are not happy, if someone is coming, I mean, if someone is provoking you, you must understand not to provoke the other part, but to take your stand. The Buddha is not a person to go keep on debating upon that. Not that he don't have facts. But the debate atmosphere is destructive. So you have to calm and quiet. You have to tell, yes, the point I understand. I'm not debating you. This is the fact. This is my own experience. Not the, what the book says, what the Buddha says. And then the other party has to either, because it's under the nose. So therefore the Buddha, the Pasura Sutta, earlier we did it. He was a debater. Everywhere going. But the Buddha is confronting. And teaching him, there is a method through the debate to take it introvert journey, not the extrovert. And therefore, he used the debate as a measure to have a rapport with the other person, but never fertilized the debate. But again, Venerable Sariputta is very famous. He has enough work, but anyone come along his way, he never give up. He give the solid answer with his own life experience and ask the other person to come here to the present moment and tell me what you are telling. Then it is something new. It's releasing the pressure. So present day, the world leaders, they are clueless about this confusion, about the climatic situation, about the war. So we being meditators, we have to give them a kind of a sound base through the faith or through the trust, which is nothing to confuse, because you people are responsible about this or decision making, but you are make decision with the confused mind. So we have compassion, we have understanding about that. So therefore Barack Obama is still, don't corner the politicians, then there's no way. So you have to have a kind of a healthy pressure telling this is what we need from you. So likewise, the clear mind with the clarity, whenever they are ready to accept, accept the fact, we must have our own proposals. It is not to force them, not to threat them, but to say, accept that you have done a wrong decision. But in time, whenever the decision happen, you are the people make decisions. So why don't you think about this internal the climatic crisis they have never heard about. They know how to, the scientific methods and the economic method and the social method, but the individual method, mind your own business method, never. It will never be popular. That's a very solid answer. So therefore we are representing that. We are cultivating, we are practicing, and we are in peace. But whenever such a thing happens, if they are asking, if you are ready to listen, we are ready to share with. Even with Magadhyaya.
So the next stanza is, why should that Brahman assert it's true? Or with whom would he dispute its false? when for him there is no equal and unequal, with whom would he engage in debate? So here the Buddha is saying, why should that Brahman, meaning why should that Arahant assert? Like, why should that enlightened or wise person assert it's true? Or why should they dispute that it is false? When for that person, when that enlightened person, there is no equal and unequal. For whom would an enlightened person engage in debate? Because there, here the Buddha is pointing again, for whom, meaning like there is no, this is talking about anatta, that for whom, meaning there is no person. So when we see that there is no personhood inside a person, there's just aggregates forming, there's a process of formation of aggregates, you know, you can see this kind of game of conceitedness arising, of judgment, of comparison, and you see this manifestation of this mental phenomena that in every transaction, in every engagement, that I'm asserting there's an I, I'm asserting there's a you, I am superior to you, there's a valuation happening, when the reality is there is no I, there is no you, and there is no inferior and there is no superior. There's just the processes of these things happening constantly. And for the enlightened person, wisdom has penetrated and they become free from the idea that there is this I, free from this idea that there is a you, free from the idea that there's a superior or an inferior. And therefore, there is no reason to engage in any debate. Like, this is the reality. This is the way it is. Why should I argue about the way the world is and, you know, try and defend that it's some other way or something like that? And you can see why then it's such a great breakthrough to the Dhamma, because one is no longer just held by views, opinions, knowledge, learning, observances and behaviors, but one is in fact just present to the very moment, and one is seeing it with wisdom. One sees things as they really are, and one understands and can trace things back to the cause. So maybe you can...
So this problem is that within you, even the conceit, even the ditthi or view, even the desire, no problem. Whenever you are relating with the second person only, communication and the misconception and the confusion and bewilderment happens. So therefore, as far as you are yourself, no harm. Whatever the view you have, it doesn't matter. Whether you are equal or superior, no problem. And you have a desire, personal desire, no problem. But whenever you are relating, when you are expressing, when you are see others, that's the problem. So therefore, we have to understand the communication means at least two people. Then no end. But still we can talk how the communication mislead, how this technology and all the... mass media and all the kind of misleading, because it's been used by few confused people. So we, all the three people, you know, you don't know Ukraine war. No harm. Still you are American, still you are Japanese, still you are Chinese, no harm. Because we are not expressing something, we are not getting something out of it, so it is not affecting you. People will say you are idiots. You are going to the forest and living and without listening to and all that. They can say, even if you have ideas, if you are not selling them, if you are not marketing them, no problem. So this part, mass media never understand. Mass media is a confusion. The Buddha is talking to the individual person. He considers it as a father, and Magandhya considers it as a daughter, and the wife considers the mother, then confusion, then conceit. So therefore, whenever it is taken to the here, now I am for criterion, everything is sorted out. All the problems get immediate answer. But the thing is how to maintain this thought moment to the next thought moment. For that you must have kind of a discipline, kind of a constituency, that is called sustainability, from present moment awareness to the next moment. So all information may or may not be provoking or may not be promoting. So we know, I hope, we know present moment awareness is the answer for anything. We must try to understand how to maintain the present moment awareness to the next moment, next moment, next moment, next moment. And then we can be a silent servant to the world. But the world do not know how to maintain this peace of mind. They are carried away by all the whims and all the frills and thrills. So the message, the very strong message, radical message is each and every thought moment you try, you be mindful, you are invariably giving an answer to the world problems. Not only to you, you are making a model, a role model, you are giving a silent sermon, mind your own business. People will say you are callous and you are not concerned about, but you are dynamic. You always try to keep your here and now mindfulness or diligence or vigilance. So nothing to prove, nothing to profess others. Take it. But for the last 30, 40 years, that is increasing. People understand it. No use of mass media, no use of CNN and Fox News. You have your news media to recommend yourself, be here and now. So you are not carried away by all the news magnates and all the news media. But not that you are passive, you are dynamic, you are giving. So even for that message, this Magandhya Sutta is giving. Yes, you can avoid the debate and argue and all the kind of thing, but all the time you have to keep your stream of consciousness mindful and maintain as much as possible. Let it spread like a contagious disease, like corona, all the other people to be here and now. It is panacea. It is like an antivirus. It is like antibodies. Okay, we are going to stop this thing because we have taken 1 hour.